Soul Sister Radio. Soul Sister Radio.
I heard, no, wait. No, I hear static.
I was a dead man.
Yeah.
Out in the cold. Life was a pit and I was deep in a hole. Just about to give up. Then lo and behold, a voice from within said, save your soul. Yo, brothers and sisters all around the globe, I got a story, word, it's gotta be told to my family, friends, fans, even my foes. It's like this, y'all, this is how it goes. I was out in the world without a name or a goal, huh, out of school and out of control, set in my ways, yeah, stuck in the mold, and going the wrong way down a one-way road. Young and bold, I didn't wanna be told, I used to steal and brag about the stuff I stole. Then one bright day, my mind got blown when a voice from within said, save your soul. No, I didn't want to be told. Things were looking up and I was on the roll. I was a rude boy and a Romeo, and anywhere I went I started the show. I had money, woman, plenty of gold, and an overinflated ego. I was a dead man, but I didn't know until a voice from within said, save your soul. A movie, and I was playing the role of a black youth living in the ghetto, where the action was, that's where I'd go. Right or wrong, I'll be going with the flow, but what you reap is what you sow. It's like karma, the bad you do will follow. You were round, and I was going down, right down, with my face in the ground, two hands bound to a siren sound, none of my so-called friends anywhere to be found. As I thought to myself, in life you're alone, a voice from within said, anyone home? Yes, Lord, well here I be, if I ain't ready yet, I will never be. I'm sorry for the things that I did before, believe me, Lord, I won't do them no more. I'll be an arrow, if you will be my bow, and anywhere I'm sent, I'll gladly go. I'll be a witness all around the world, to every man, every woman, every boy and girl. Cause I was born in the ghetto with a strong survive, and with a will to strive, I began to rise. From 79, or was it 75? When reggae music began to open my eyes about the truth, the right, Jah the Most High, and how to achieve that little pie in the sky. Inspirated, yeah, I was totally motivated. To the border, I decided to chop the mic. But my direction was not to only those of my complexion, but the brown, yellow, red, and the white man. Critics criticize, cynics cynicize, any entertainer with a message they victimize. But in this world of sin, it's no surprise. So with the media, I sympathize. I hear the rich man's laughter, hear the poor man's cries. Hypocrites advertise their lies through their eyes. Everyone's born, most of us die, but only God's children get the prize. Don't be a fool, be cool, come on and get wise. Yeah, wise up, no compromise, and listen to the voice that resides within your mind. Cause God has sent a guide to all mankind. Choice is yours, life above or death below. It's up to you to save your soul.
Soul Sister Radio. Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gift, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Elevate with Kate. If you're not happy with where your life is right now, join us every Thursday at 4:30 Pacific time or anytime at soulsisterradio.com. Find the tools that you need to live above your circumstances at a higher level. And we are actually broadcasting today from the Westin in downtown Long Beach, beautiful location.
As we get ready for...
Yes, we're going to see Joyce Meyer, one of our favorite women ever, and she's speaking tonight in Long Beach at 7 o'clock, I believe. So Maria and I are very excited about that. I hope some of you will be joining us there. I really want to talk today about something that's meant a lot in my life when everything got really difficult, going through homelessness, divorce, abuse, all those things, is that God showed me something that meant a lot to me, and I call it the Joseph Principle. And it's the story of Joseph in Genesis. And he was a man who had a dream when he was young. Now, he was the favorite son of his dad, and his brothers hated his guts, but he had a dream where his entire family was bowing down to him. It was a vision, and that someday he would be in a position of leadership. Well, he was pretty much next to the youngest at that point, and they hated him. So their desire was to destroy him, and they thought he was just an arrogant brat. So God gives him the dream, and his life goes from bad to worse. The next thing that happens is his brothers, they fought to kill him, but instead they decide to throw him into a pit. And then some slave traders come by, and they sold their brother into slavery, if you can even imagine such a thing. Now, just remember, they didn't have the same mother, so that's part of the problem here. So they sell him into slavery. He ends up working for Potiphar, who works for the Pharaoh of Egypt. And Potiphar sees some potential in him and puts him in charge of everything. Joseph is doing great. Everything's going right. He gets a lot of respect. He's making an impact. He's looked up to by his master. And then the master's wife starts making eyes at him and propositions him and keeps turning her away. And one day she grabs his cloak in her hand, and he has to make a speedy exit. And he leaves his clothing in her hand and runs off naked. But anything to get away from that situation. He says to her, "How can I betray my master's trust by sleeping with you? It would be wrong." But and she's angry when he runs away, so she tells everyone that he tried to rape her. So what happens next? Joseph, who's done absolutely nothing wrong, ends up in Pharaoh's dungeon, where he spends another, I forget, 2 to 4 years. I don't know, he's in there for a while, right? And again, the jailer sees potential in him. It's totally the favor of God. When God puts favor on you, no matter what your circumstance, he will elevate you. So God, the jailer sees potential in Joseph, puts him in charge. And again, Joseph is somewhat prospering, but he's not getting out. Then one day, the butler and the baker, or cupbearer is what they call the butler, they work for Pharaoh. Well, they're both thrown into the dungeon with Joseph, which is totally a God thing. They each have a dream, and Joseph says, "Well, I'll ask God the interpretation," and God tells him what the dreams mean. For one of them, the dream means that his head's going to be cut off, and the other one, the dream means that he's going to be released. So Joseph tells him the meanings of the dreams. It comes true, and when the one who was going to have be released back to Pharaoh and be back in favor, before he leaves, Joseph says, "Remember me when you return to your master." So he's thinking, "Oh, this is my ticket out. This guy's going to remember me." So, and I believe that one was the butler, so for the cupbearer. So when he gets back to Pharaoh, he totally forgets about Joseph. Until a couple of years later, Pharaoh has a dream, and he's very disturbed about the dream. And he not only wants somebody to tell him both, you know, what the dream means. And that's where Joseph once again gets his chance. He appears before Pharaoh and tells him the interpretation of the dream. And the outcome of it is overnight, in a matter of a few hours, Joseph goes from a condemned prisoner to the second in command over Egypt, and basically the main ruler, because he ran everything. And God sent him ahead of time to get ready, the country ready for a famine. Not just Egypt, but his own people, the Israelites, were also in danger. And God sent Joseph ahead of time to prepare for that and save millions of lives. So what do I learn from that? Well, what that tells me is that the situation you're in right now is actually the difficulty, the challenge you're going through is often a training ground for your greatest victory. So God doesn't give you a dream just to get you false hope. So a lot of times, many of us have been given a vision and dream of our future, and it's not being fulfilled right now. And it's heartbreaking because you feel like, well, maybe you didn't hear God right. Maybe you didn't really need me to have this position, or maybe you didn't really need me to ever be successful or ever be out of debt or ever be happily married. Maybe none of that's really God's plan. Maybe I just misheard God. But no, the truth is God gives you that vision, and then you get hit by a trial. The vision is meant to keep you on track and keep you stable through the trial and to keep your hope alive. Because once you lose hope, that's when it becomes a downhill slide. So God gives you the vision to keep your hope. So hang on to those visions. Now, if you look at Joseph's life, everything that he went through was leading up to him becoming ready to be that second in command over Egypt. If he hadn't worked for Potiphar, he wouldn't have learned how to manage resources and how to be in charge of people and how to be a leader. If he hadn't ended up in Pharaoh's prison, he wouldn't have known the money system. He wouldn't have known the customs of the court. He wouldn't have known any of that stuff. So everything he went through was a building block. So his greatest trial was actually setting the stage for his greatest triumph because he remained faithful. He never said, God, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm sick of this. And he could have. We all have to get to that point where we just say, you know, really, Lord, I don't think it's worth it. I don't see anything coming down the road in my life that's going to make this garbage right now worth the trouble. But let me just encourage you right now to hold on, to hang on to God as tight as you can, to talk to him. Just have a daily conversation. Say, you know what, Lord, this thing here and here and here, these things here are kind of bugging me. My life sucks. Okay, I got problems. I know that I can't get out of this by myself, but I also know that you have my answers. Lord, just show me the next step. You don't have to show me 5 years down the road, but show me the next step to get to that dream that you gave me. And that's what I did when I was in my rotten circumstances almost for over 2 years. And that whole time, I just kept going back to God saying, you know what? It looks really awful. It looks impossible. I don't think I'm ever going to get out of it. But when I did finally come out of it, God put me in a position to help other people who are even in worse circumstances than I had been. He put me in a position to fix a broken homeless system in my county. And that's what God's using me for right now. I'm really excited about that. It makes everything I went through worth it. And when people call me or talk to me and they're going through homelessness or a difficult trial right now, I always say to them, look, God will show you the way out if you ask him to, and if you just step by step every day do what he says to do. God will show you the way to get out of this. But it's not just about you. When you get out of this and get to the other side and back on track towards your destiny, God's going to use you to pull other people along beside you. You just reach back, like I always say. You don't have to reach back to somebody who's, you know, 5 miles behind you. Reach back to somebody who's just 2 steps behind you. Grab their hand and pull them up to where you are and just keep going and keep them alongside you. Help someone else. What you're going through now, the answers you get are going to help someone else. You are going to be in a position to minister to someone who is very desperate and may even be despairing of life itself, and you are their answer. So right now, I would just ask you, whatever you're going through, just ask God to give you the answers and then allow you to lead somebody else through the same circumstance.
Oh, good.
So, you want to talk?
Oh.
I've got Maria here, and I just wanted to, I know Maria has been through a lot, actually very recently, some not very pleasant stuff is going on, but Maria is a visionary. She has a vision for where God wants her to be in the future, and I would love a little input from Maria on how she has seen this working in her life. So, Maria, can you say that some of the things that happened to you that at the time seemed like your worst nightmare, was God able to turn those around and use those in your life?
Every single little thing. And again, when you think that you are going, and that comes there, we should be okay. When you think that you're going in a direction where you don't know why God has you there, trust me, I was listening to what you were saying, and I hated aerospace. Hate, very strong word, hate, okay?
Yeah.
But now I understand the dynamics of why God had me do aerospace and work corporate America. I'm not a corporate America girl. However, those things now are vital to what it is that we are creating, trying to create a new business so women that have overcome do have a place we can go to. Again, not something I wanted to do. owning my own salon for 13 years. Loved it. Okay? I have learned now how we're going to sell the station airtime, just like you sell a station in a nail salon, in order for our host to go ahead and have a platform for them to stand on. If I didn't have a salon, I wouldn't know how to do that. Then sewing diamonds for 8 years, okay, I did love that. That was pretty cool. However, learning about the facets of a diamond and how each one is individual, like the people that God brings into our life, yeah, sometimes diamonds don't look so good, okay, but if you sparkle them up a little bit, okay, great. But yeah, there has not been one thing that God has not used in my life, even when you don't think you were where you're supposed to be. Trust me, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Take every little bit; it counts.
I totally agree. And you're so just look at it as a training ground. And yeah, it's not real fun. And it's true that sometimes the circumstance we're in is partly due to mistakes we've made, or maybe we got off the path with God and went our own way. But the fact is that God can use any circumstance you're in right now, and you are never so far off the path that God can't put you back on the right path. If you feel like you've strayed, all you have to do is say, Lord, I think I messed up. Can you just steer me back to where I need to be to fulfill my destiny? And don't ever think you don't have a destiny. And if you don't know what that is, you need to get alone with God and just have a conversation and say, Lord, I'm not going to make it through what I'm going through right now. It's really not even worth being here. That's how I felt at the time anyway. It's not worth being here, Lord, unless you can show me what this is all about and where you're leading me. Just give me at least a general direction of what my destiny is and how I'm going to impact this world. And trust me, you are meant to have a huge impact on this world. It's not just about you. It's about who you are, who God created you to be, and what he wants to do through you. So your life is probably a lot bigger than what you think. All you see right now is your circumstance. But
10 minutes.
Okay, so keep looking at the side.
The question that I have for you, Kate, is what is the worst job that you had, and how has it benefited your life today?
Oh, I would have to say my worst job was selling timeshares. And because to be successful in that job required me to be less than truthful about what people were getting as an incentive to buy a timeshare, and I couldn't be untruthful, so I didn't sell very many timeshares. But I got used to interrupting strangers and talking to them. And
How did that work? Like a really shy person, really.
That's funny because I am shy, and it gave me a lot of. It forced me to be unshy, forced me to approach strangers, to talk about stuff that they maybe weren't very interested in. And I had done some of that before, but not like that, not on a daily basis. Where all my job was to stop a stranger, try to sell them something. Not my personality, but it was really good training. I have to say that it was good training, and I'm glad I went through it. At the time, it seemed like a miserable existence, but it gave me the ability to be comfortable around strangers. I love talking to strangers now. It gives me great joy.
You just feel kind of strange talking to them.
I am strange. I am strange as well as talking to strangers.
Oh, good. You can tell our audience what an amazing meal that we're getting.
Yes, we just served some amazing food here at the Westin in Long Beach, and we're delighted. And
it's very beautiful.
It's very pretty.
So, next question I have for you. If there's somebody there that is an owner and I'm trying to utilize a job to get them, that job is to make them out, such as we were talking about on the bridal here.
Oh, wow. Boy,
there's lots of options people can talk about. And there are some people that don't want those options. So what's a simple that we can get to people to go and do? What do you think? I know.
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I would start here. I had to learn not to talk myself out of things before God opened the door. I would always say, well, I'll never do that, and I'll never do that either. But I found that some of those things that I did not want to do ended up being a tremendous training for me. Although they were awkward and uncomfortable, they were tremendous training, and they were valuable down the road. So the first thing I would do is I'd say, Lord, right now, I'm just going to open myself to any possibilities you have. I'm not going to close any doors unless I know, you know, if you confirm it's not your will. If you open a door, I always ask God, open the right doors, close the wrong doors, open doors that no man can shut, close doors that no man can open, because I just really want to be in your will. Because I know no matter what I come up with, the perfect job, if I'm not in God's will, it will be an absolutely miserable experience. And honestly, you don't know if you're going to like a job until you get there, but God knows. So I would be open to anything. Just remove any limitations you put on God, because he is a limitless God, and do not expect to be miserable. I always say, God, I believe you're going to reward me financially and creatively and in every other way with a fulfilling occupation. And sometimes it's been through a trial that I find that fulfillment. And I once had a career counselor who would say to me, success is doing what you don't know how. We always want to choose the path of least resistance, take the comfortable, easy way out, but that's not God's way. He is building us into, I like to call, warrior princesses. I used to love Xena, the warrior princess. Man, that woman rocks. I always love a female character who can kick butt, and that's what God wants us to be. No more victim, no more letting life roll over you. Just take it on with God at your side, and you are invincible when you're in the will of God. That's what I've learned. You are absolutely invincible. And even if you step outside of the will of God, you take a few slaps in the face, hey, just get back in there and say, Lord, I'm ready. I'm ready now. I'm on board, whatever you want to do. And he'll change it around. He always has. When I first came to my current position with a nonprofit, I was set up for complete failure. I had a consultant there who really wanted my job, so she was backstabbing me to my board. I didn't know. I had an employee who was a former board member who refused to report to me, and so she was going to my board behind my back. I didn't even realize this was going on for 6 months. I was clueless. I thought everybody had, the same motivation to help the homeless, and I was totally wrong. So it came down to the wire, and those two people eventually left, and I was the only one left standing because I was in the center of God's will. That first 6 months was hell, but when I came through it, I was a strong, confident person, and I knew that I was the right one for the job. So I'm not saying life is all easy peasy when you're walking with the Lord, but it's certainly an adventure, and he's always got your back. So every day you just declare, I have the favor of the Lord surrounds me like a shield. The favor of the Lord surrounds me like a shield. And you will see doors open and opportunities popping up you never imagined were possible. Just don't say no to any door that you are sure that God has opened. Don't be timid. Don't be shy. Just go through that door.
We have a question from the chat room. And that question is, I'm really afraid to start to journal. In order for me to elevate, how do you really take the step and start to write your own story?
Boy, that is, you just do it. You just get a notebook and you schedule a time every single day. And mine is actually my devotional prayer time, and what I found is that I write my prayers as I pray them because I want to be able to look back later and see how God answered those prayers. So I just write it out as I'm talking to God, and I just have a normal conversation like I'm talking right now. I tell him exactly how I feel and what I'm afraid of and what I'm hoping for, and then I listen, and honestly, he gives me answers. I just know he's speaking to me, and he'll confirm it later. Sometimes I'm almost right about what he's saying, a little off, but he'll always correct me. But I have conversations. It's not like I hear loud voices or anything, but I just know. I just know. I don't want you to think I'm totally off, but I know that God, when God wants something for me or doesn't want something, he speaks to me. And sometimes I'll just blow it off and say, oh, seriously, that can't be God, because that's just way out there. But you know what? He'll bring it up again. If it's really him, he'll bring it up two or three more times to confirm it to you. He'll send people to tell you that. He'll have you run across Bible verses or books that say the same thing. So God does not want you to be confused. He wants to give you clear direction. And, yes, journaling is really important. That's prayer journaling. Sometimes it's good to just sit at the end of the day and say, what happened today? What was good? What was bad? What do I see God doing? You need to keep track of the little coincidences that are really God bringing people and things into your life that normally you just blow off. We take so many things for granted, and God is putting his handprint on our life every single day. And if we just think of it as a coincidence, and we forget about it. But you need to be aware that God is working in your life. He absolutely adores you, and he always wants the best. He is not judging you. He's not punishing you. He adores you, and he wants the best for you. You are his princess, and that's just how he feels about you. You have a song, you said? Hey, we'll close off with a song. We'll see you again next week. You can reach me at Kate, C-A-T-E, at ElevateWithKate.com. See you next week.
Somehow forgotten that you are faced with circumstances you can't get through. Right now it seems that there's no way out and you're going under. But God's proven time and time again, he'll take care of you, and he'll do it again. Oh, yes, he can do it again. If you would just take a look at where you are now and where you've been, well, hasn't he always come through for you? Oh, he's the same now as then.
Don't you know God has not changed?
Oh, you may not know how, you may not know when, but he'll do it again. You see, God knows the things that you're going through, and he knows how you're hurting. You see, he knows just how your heart has been broken too. For he's the God of the stars and of the sun and of the sand, and he is your father. You see, he can calm the storms. He'll find some way to fix this for you. And he'll do it again. Oh, yes, he can do it again.
He'll do it again.
If you would just take a look at where.
Yeah.
Soul Sister Radio.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Welcome to The Advocate. I'm Susan Shengazar. I am an author. I am an emergency room nurse. And most of all, I am a woman of God, bringing to you each week here on Soul Sister Radio amazing testimonies, triumphs of men and women who have excelled in getting out of domestic and sexual abuse. Today we have just an admirable woman who will be sharing her story. And I want you to know that this story just tops it all. And I just know that God has a place in life for people who come out of these situations just so we can help others take a hand up in the world. But before I go there, I was looking through the archives, and as a writer, I spend so much time writing, I can't tell you how many folders I have of things that are just what I call downloads from God, and fortunately, I date things and keep them in reference, and this one is dated August 22nd, 2010, and today's August 22nd, 2013. And it's entitled, O Mercies We Ask of Thee. O Mercies We Ask of Thee, we bring your mercies to your people, O Lord. We bring mercies to the ones who wait and are hidden from Thee. Come out, and hide not from Thee. Your heart has been seen. There is nothing I haven't seen. So hide not thy face from God Almighty. I am King. I see, I have seen thee in secret and indeed. Redeem the time as the days are indeed evil. You are called to me now, so come. I will keep calling until the end. Come one, come all have been called. But not all will come. You wait, you see. You too are calling them to yourself. Who will, as I do see, I see, written by me, Susan Shengazar, 2010. Today, our amazing show hosts are in Long Beach, getting ready to go see Joyce Meyer, and I had endeavored to be with them, but I'm with them in spirit and indeed, because I love them so much. But they're there, and I am here. And today I wanted to share scripture, Ephesians 2, 4 through 7. It says, God is so rich in mercy, and he loved me so very much, that even while I was dead because of my sins, he gave me life when he raised Christ from the dead. It is not only by God's special favor that I've been saved, for he raised me from the dead along with Christ. And I'm seated with him in the heavenly realms, all because I am one with Christ Jesus. And so God can always point to me as an example of the incredible wealth of his favor and kindness towards me, as shown in all he has done for me through Christ Jesus. This scripture is an example that God gave in the Word, but so many of us in the world are examples of this by what has gone on in our lives and how we've gotten through it. And some of you may look at people who've had horrific experiences in their life and go, who would want a life like that? But I say to those people, did I have a choice to stay there or get out of it? And some of us didn't have choices because of the prisons we were in as children. But when we had a chance to escape, we did. For nobody would want to endure the things that we've seen and had done to us in our lifetimes, being victims of domestic violence and sexual abuse. But because of going through that, we are who we are today. And so here you have me, Susan Shengizar, on the radio today, bringing to you testimonies of people who were once broken and now serve and stand on the front lines for God and His people, to ensure that no secret goes untold and that everyone knows that these demons are exposed, and we are here today to take every one of them out one by one. And so today I bring to the show a woman. Her name is Carmela. And before I bring her on, I'm just going to read a brief synopsis of her bio. It says, being nothing more to her parents than a house servant as a child prostitute, Carmela's free time was occupied with studying her mother's moods and strategizing how to best meet the ever-changing whims of her parents in order to avoid having the timeouts in the dark, dank, spider, rat, and snake-infested basement. Time and time again, her mother warned her if she complained to anyone about the happenings in their house, the workings for her father, by letting his friends visit her at night, it would get back to her grandfather, and then Carmela herself would have the guilt to bear for leaving her siblings fatherless and seeing her grandfather die of a heart attack or locked away. Carmela was not certain who she was to tell anyway in grade school. She learned that she was to tell the teachers, police, and authorities in the community. Were these not the same who were coming to visit her at night? If her grandfather was so scary and what they were doing was so wrong, seeing herself as the cause and the solution to the problem, Carmela took to harming herself with the intention of suicide. This on top of dealing with normal childhood illnesses, sexually transmitted diseases, endometriosis, cancer, and treatments, along with the scarring from the abuse, which started at a tender age, prompted doctors to say, would she never have children? The doctors were wrong about this. Carmela did have children from which she is now estranged as punishment for leaving the mafia, and who could see the health problems she would have even for decades. The various ways in which she continually was punished by family who refused to own up to the horrid truth. Today, Carmela uses her own experiences to help people out of child and domestic abuse, homelessness, human trafficking, exploitation, and organized crime. Due to poor health, she no longer crisscrosses the United States imploring communities to address the needs of families. Instead, she relies on the use of social media to conduct her educational outreaches. Believing Carmela's story is inspiring. It's an educational vehicle which will empower viewers this generation and generations to come. The Majestic Dreams Foundation and co-producer Amy Galicia Tor is capturing nearly 30 years of Carmela's journey as a survivor and her life's work in a documentary called John the Film. Carmela, I am just flabbergasted at the amount of abuse you have endured in your life, and I welcome you to our show. Thank you for coming on and being part of Soul Sister Radio today.
Thank you, Suzanne, for helping me.
Is it Suzanne or Susan?
Susan.
Susan, thank you so much for having me today.
I just don't know what to say and where to start. And when I watched the little trailer on the film, I'm amazed that you survived to tell your story. And if I could just reach through the phone and give you a big hug, there it is, because you are just such a sweet soul to come out and share your story. And I commend you for that. And I stand with you.
Thank you. I had the opportunity yesterday to help a friend of mine film a Holocaust survivor speaking to troubled youth. And afterwards, I spoke with her for a few moments. Excuse me. And it was so beautiful that her story, her life story, taught her the same thing it taught me, that love does overcome all wounds. Love heals all wrongs, just like the Bible says, and that we are the human family. And if we came to understand that we are the human family, we wouldn't do nearly as what we do to one another. So she and I became fast friends.
The film, John, the film, when did that project start for you?
For me personally, it started in 2005 with a friend of mine from CBS Studios. He was the head of photography. He was also my pastor. And he said, I believe in my spirit that you need to do this. And I said, do what? And he said, put your story to a movie. And I said, well, since you're my mentor, I will pray about it. And he said, no, you will write, is what you will do. In Japanese, he's very direct. He said, you will write. That is what you will do. I said, okay. So I started writing, and right away he started shopping the story around. And I was getting offers from all the major studios and production companies, offered millions and millions of dollars, and I just didn't feel right with any of them. So I waited, and then I asked him to teach me productions, because I thought, he's right. After I've written so much and I've studied so much about myself, and I had to research, imagine having to research your own life. I said, I need you to help me to do this. I don't want anybody to tell my story but me. And I said, I firmly believe that I survived it, so I must tell it. And I say that to all survivors even today. You live the story, you tell the story on your terms. And that is something that I've always done since I began telling my story in many different venues. And I wanted to stay along that same, stay true to that same dictate. So he did. He started teaching me productions, and I thought, at this rate, I'm not going to make this movie until I'm 60 or 80, but that's okay. Well, then last December of 2012, someone asked me, Amy Galicia Torres asked me to lend my story to a documentary that she was making about survivor activists. And I said, okay, because I do that quite often. I lend my story to agencies as long as they're helping with abuse. And so I did with her. And then she contacted me in January. She said, I'm making your movie. I said, what do you mean? I said, my life is going to be a movie. Yes, I already have one in the works in South Africa. She said, no. I have enough footage here that I could compile it into a movie, into a documentary, and get it out there. And I said, oh, no, not without me. No one's telling my story without me. And she said, oh, good, you're on board. I said, oh, my goodness. And so with me on board, she had ideas to broaden it and make it into what we're doing now. Since my health is poor, we're compiling my work and my symposiums into this documentary, along with my biography. So it's primarily my life story, but not solely only mine. There's another survivor, and also giving his story, as well as we are both choosing to be representative voices for those who are not normally heard, and with the responsibility that we know that there are many people who won't survive their abuse, and not everybody gets rescued. That's just it's probably about 1%, if that actually do get rescued. The number of people who go through such horrible abuse, or prostitution, or any type of human trafficking or human exploitation, actually just grow out of it. If they are able to survive it, they grow out of it, and they move on in life. So the fact that people, you know, nowadays you hear so much about human trafficking and all these rescuings happening, that's really a very small percentage. The majority of people are like me. They grow up, they grow out of it, and they have to endure horrible pain. Whether they've been rescued or not, they'll endure horrible heart pain, horrible soul pain.
Carmela, both your parents, are they alive now?
Yes, they are.
And how are they treating you because of this coming out?
We don't know. Somebody asked me the other day how they possibly could not know, since it's up on the internet. Back in my hometown, people only use the internet if they're going to actually research something. People know me so well over there, they don't have any reason to research me. They know me. I do work with the homeless. I do work with the veterans. I work with elderly. I work with anybody who's been abused. I don't just focus on sexual abuse. I make it clear my views about the human trafficking movement that has come up within the last couple decades. And what I focus on is abuse, exploitation, and organized crime, and homelessness. So they believe that I'm so busy with all these projects that they wouldn't even imagine or conceive, so therefore they don't even know or think about me doing a documentary. My mom did get word of the movie in South Africa, and she made her opinion on the matter very clear. She, but now with, I presented to her a couple projects I was doing with homeless veterans. So now she thinks that my advocacy is focusing on that currently. So she thinks I'm distracted with other things.
Has she ever said sorry to you?
You know what's ironic is my father said he was sorry and he and I don't talk. My mom has never said that she was sorry. As a matter of fact, she believes that she was a very good mother. And she and I talk. I don't know why that is, but that is.
How many siblings were in your house?
There's three of us all together.
And did this happen to all three of you?
Not to my knowledge. I know to the one did go through something that is not spoken about because that sibling chooses to keep it secret. But knowing what I know about the signs of abuse, especially sexual abuse, I do believe that that sibling did go through something very traumatic, even if it was a one-time occurrence. I do know they went through residual, which is they watched myself be abused, and they also watched my mother be abused. So that had emotional, mental, and spiritual consequences. It was traumatic for them. That is also abuse. That's called residual abuse.
So you're saying your siblings watched the sexual abuse?
They didn't watch the sexual abuse, but they did not watch me be sexually abused. What they watched was me get beat. I would get beat often. So in addition to being prostituted, I was also a house servant. And it was custom at night. The house was not met to the specifications of my parents that I was beaten. And my brother, my sister would have to watch it before they went to bed. And sometimes if my father was drunk, my mom would also get beaten. Yeah, that was usually at night. We usually went to bed with crying black and blue. You know, we would be tortured before bed. So
Michelle, during school, did any teacher ever pull you aside and question anything that you could remember?
When I was in second grade and I was still a house servant, I was going to school. I remember this. I wore a hooded sweater, during the month of May. It was either April or May when the weather was warm. And the teacher asked me if I was being abused at home. I didn't know the term abuse. And it was back in the day when the teachers were just when they were required to ask. Because I remember this because my parents talked about this over dinner and they were instructing me what to ask. So Robbie would want to answer under different scenarios. If the teacher says this, if the teacher asks that. But that never came up. The teacher asked me, are you abused? And I looked at her with all honesty and said no, because I didn't know what the term abuse meant.
Wow, bless your heart.
So
now, how old are you today? Do you mind me asking?
I will soon be 42.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and what state did you grow up in?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Yes.
So, religion-wise, what was the denomination in your household, if any?
Catholic. But let me tell you, this is another layer to the story. when I was 3 days shy of turning 10, well, just a couple days before that, I finally told about a rape, an incestual rape that I endured when I was 6. Finally had told somebody after 4 years. And then I told my cousin. Then we told my her mom and dad. And then we told my aunt, took me to tell my mother. And then a couple days later, we told my father. Well, that night that I told my father, he said, "How could you make me choose between my baby brother, my flesh and blood, and you?" Well, I was by this time in fourth grade learning in school. We didn't exactly learn exactly where babies came from, but we did know that we came from our parents. So I took it hard, quite naturally. He sent me up to my room, and I felt like my cells were like little shards of glass. I really expected myself to start popping and bleeding. I mean, it was just the sensation of bubble wrap was happening to my body. You know, when you pop the bubble wrap, that little pop, pop, right. pop. I really expected stigmata or something to happen. And then audibly, I heard the voice of God calling me. And I thought I was going crazy. And I looked under my bed. I looked at my armoire. I looked out on my balcony, on the roof there, and I couldn't see a man. And then when I heard my name again, I started crying, and I said, "I am as crazy as my mom and dad say I am." And then I heard, "I am your father. I love you." And this peace that was just like a warm heating blanket was so beautiful. And I felt so filthy, dirty, disgusting. But he explained to me. First time ever I had my life explained to me. I did not get saved over John 3:16. I ended up reading Ezekiel, 16, 4 through 14, about the little girl, the baby that's thrown in the desert. And I was worldly enough to understand what that meant, and that God was going to grow me up. He was going to take me through all the stages of life, and that I was a castaway, and I very much was a castaway that night. But he raised me up to be a princess. So, and his wife before anything else. So, and then I also read Jeremiah, because I had a horrible speech problem. So I read where God would send me to wherever he sent me. He would send me to say whatever he told me to say to whomever. And I've had the privilege to talk with children, toddlers, all the way up to the elderly and hear their stories about abuse. I've sat around the table eating with mafiosos and hearing their stories, getting them saved, having Bible studies with them. That actually is my favorite part of my ministry work. But I've also worked with pimps and pedophiles, prostitutes, homeless, you name it, just about every people group possible.
That is so beautiful. I'm just going to see if we're going to take a station break here since my producer is in Long Beach. And are we going to take a station break, Maria? I guess not. So we're going to continue with Michelle Carmela telling her story. Michelle, this movie is on the page in the internet, and it says, "John, the worst story never told." And I believe that is so true, that it's just going to shock America when they see the horrific crimes that go on in the houses next door to us. And the world is seeing it more and more with what just happened in Ohio, those women that were entrapped. And I was so happy to see that they bulldozed that house down.
Oh,
because it was a house of horror. And
that's
so when I read about you being in the basement in the dark and all that, no human being should endure this. But we know it's going on. It's going on in Brazil. It's going on everywhere. Children are being tortured and tormented and are sex slaves. And their very human needs are being taken away from them. And if you don't mind me asking, you said you're very ill, your health is poor. What is going on with that? And is there something that we can put out on this radio show that people can help with to help you with that?
Well, people want to help. I would really rather have them donate to the Kickstarter. And they could go to www.themajestic.org. What's going on with my health is, I'm sure you're familiar with this term, being a nurse, idiopathic anaphylaxis.
Okay.
So, and for the listening audience, what that means is I have random allergies. I have allergic reactions every day, but there's things that sometimes I'm not allergic to that I do become allergic to it, or things that I, you know, that just random allergy reactions happen on different occasions. My throat has been known to swell up while I'm eating something. So, and of course, you know, that's life-threatening. I also have my white blood cells are constantly high. So I take over-the-counter anti-allergy medicine, antihistamines, to keep my white blood cells down. And I take several of those. I have to take several of those. I have to basically have to take medicine so I could interact with people. So yesterday when I went to the event to film the Holocaust survivor, when I was getting ready and showering, I was fine, but I noticed by the time I got out of the shower, I was covered head to toe with hives. And so then, within an hour later, my kidneys were aching. Today, I'm still working through the reaction. My kidneys are not aching. The pain has moved to another part of my body. And my breathing has been labored for a couple days. These allergic reactions, I've been hospital free for about almost 3 years. We're up to 2009. About 2005 or so, to probably a little bit before then, I would go into what's called near-death experience somewhere between four and five times, well, 3 to 5 times a year. And on top of that, comas, also 3 to 5 times a year, with regular ER visits in between. Now, I still have reactions, but I have, God says we perish for lack of wisdom and knowledge. I've done quite a bit of research on this condition, so, and studying up on my health, keeping records of what my triggers are and what they are not. so I keep lists as current as possible. So doing that has enabled me to stay out of the hospital. Also, I started studying adrenal fatigue and worked on building up my adrenals through health and nutrition and through diet and exercise. So that also has been, I attribute that to the reversal of this. It's not a complete healing, but it is a lot better than being on life support. So, and I've, but through it all, I didn't think there would be any way at all that I would get even a deeper experience with God, but you cannot get any closer to God than having your soul face-to-face with God. So I'm very privileged to have the life experiences I've had, even though they are so strange and unique. I don't wish them upon anybody, but I am thankful that God and I have the relationship that we do.
You know, it is no coincidence that every single person I meet, like you or me and the other ones who've joined along with this hand taken across United States and other countries, that we've had so many afflictions, so many, in fact, that people find it hard to believe. And when I wrote my story, some of the people who read my book, when they met me, they were like, I can't believe I'm talking to you because I don't think you're real because of the things that happened and all the near-death experiences that I have had. And so I know that when you say you're close to God, I know that because that's where I am. I had only God in those times when nobody was listening, nobody was watching where little Susie was. And when I would survive coming out of an attack and sit on my bed all by myself, wondering, should I talk? Should I scream? Should I cry? And having your emotions shut down so much that you can't even feel your own breath because you don't know if you're dead or alive. That's when God reaches down and he sends the angels to protect you. And so I know when you say that, I feel it because I am real, but the things I went through were real. But more than that, my Heavenly Father is real. Jesus Christ stood there with his hand covering me the whole time, not liking what I went through. But all the people who've gone through this say the same thing. It is supernatural to them, but it is natural to God because he's our Father. He never left us once, and we never left him. And so he knows that. He knows our hearts were pure. He knows the trials we went through. And God never said in his word that we would go through life and not be touched and unharmed. But through it all, we never took our eyes off of him. And that's the hope that people need to know. Don't take your eyes off of God. He's never hung up on you when you've called him. We're the ones who let go. But see, you never let go. And who does not want to hear you speak? The devil. And so all these afflictions that you go through, they will leave you. I believe they will leave you, just as they left me. Because allergic reactions, oh my gosh. The last time I was in the hospital, I spent 9 days. They were going to slice my throat open. Now, how does that happen to an emergency room nurse?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I got stung by a bee at work in the ER. That's not supposed to happen.
No.
I mean, are you kidding me? But it did, 2005. So who wants to stop you from speaking? And so I just know that every day you have to put on the whole armor of God. And sometimes when we have a chink in our armor and we just didn't know that we didn't have it on, stuff happens. But I know when it does happen, God is still going to bring me out of it because I'm not going to quit speaking. And so I loved it when you said that. And I know what you're going through. God bless you.
I have had guns to my head, knives to my throat. I have been kidnapped. I mean, not all my visitations with the mafioso people were just like, you know, cherries and pie. You know, there was times, one time I was kidnapped up to a month. But I tell you what, none of these situations were what I went through as a child. I mean, that place was beautiful. It had a swimming pool. Nobody was allowed to touch me. You know, but I also had a one where I was kidnapped for like 4 or 5 hours, and they threatened the lives of my children. And I told them, I said, that would give me more incentive to speak. You're better off just killing me. You know, my children are still alive and I'm still alive. But even this past spring, when we started the movie, we started filming, and I put a couple things up on my wall. Well, I stopped doing that. So I do have, you know, we have the Kickstarter going, and we do have a Facebook page for it. But I'm not so in your face to these people anymore on Facebook.
Yeah, you have to use the wisdom.
Yes. So what happened as a result when I did first put it up on my Facebook account, I was stalked for a couple days. And the first day, this woman kept following me around, and she's actually an actress that is like, you recognize her face, but she's been in some things, but she's not like prominent, you know, but you recognize her face. And so, and she kept, so finally at one time I went up to her and I said, you haven't eaten all day, have you? I said, would you like something to eat? And she looked at me and she just like, she could just like punch me.
Oh, that's too funny.
And I said, really? I recognize your face. And I named a couple things that she had bet on that I'd seen her. And I said, it's kind of insulting to me that they think that I wouldn't know who you are. Should be insulting to you, too. And I told her where I was going to be later on. I said, that way it should make it a little bit easier for you. You don't have to backtrack and chase me as much. Well, then I went to the other location and she wasn't there, but here came this man that he came right up to me and he said, you stop what you're doing. And at this time I was eating a pretzel and I said, have you eaten all day? Cause I think I saw you a couple times too today. And he said, and he flashed a gun and I said, do you know how many times I have seen? And I said, I already know what to expect. I'm not afraid to die. I said, and do you know how many times I've seen guns flash at me? He said, what is wrong with you? Are you mentally deranged? I said, no, it's that I just don't care.
When you know where you're going to go, there is no fear of death. It's almost a relief.
And, and I said, so do you want a pretzel? And he's like, you are a blank lunatic. And I said, not as much as you all are, and I will be praying for you. So then a couple days later, somebody else, and then a couple days later, I'm sitting eating, and this elderly woman comes, and she sits, and I'm looking at her, I'm like, is she elderly or does she have makeup on? What is this? So she starts talking, and I noticed that she's quoting things that I've said over the years. She's quoting things about my life. She knows about my personal history. She knows about seminars I've, you know, things that I've given, you know, different things. I thought, oh, wow. And then she gets up to leave, and she hits the table. kind of firm, but not too hard. She said, "Dearie, you are a danger to those you love." I got up on it. Sweat. "No, you didn't." And she starts to walk away. She has a little walker, and she's in a restaurant. You know, mind you, we're in a restaurant. I followed her, and I said, "You tell those people that you are working for that I don't work for them. You do, I don't. The next time somebody comes and confronts me, I'm following that person all the way back." I said, "I feel like following you right now, following you all the way back. I order to sit down next time."
Wow.
You know what? I didn't get bothered after that. So, but the other person in the, the other survivor in the movie, John the film, he also was being followed and harassed and confronted.
Is that Nick?
Yes, and he has an incredible story. I'm so proud of him. I'm just so incredibly proud of him. So, but again, to learn more about the movie and how you could help with the funding, you would go to www.themajestic.org. It would be a great help. This movie is unique in so many different ways. Not everyone who is helping with the production is a survivor, but the majority are. So they get it. The writer and co-producer, Amy Glicia Torres, she's also the cinematographer. She is a survivor also. And so this movie goes to serve several purposes. One being to give my story for once and for all. There's so many people out there. There's so many survivors out there now with the internet and media venues telling their stories that I feel it's no longer necessary for me to tell my story. It's never been anything that I like to do anyway. I believe it's a little bit salacious, feels a salacious need for some. Not the teller, ever. Not the teller. Most of us don't like giving our stories at all. But it's the audience. Forgive me, y'all. But I'm just being real here. I've gone to so many different churches over the years and have seen faces where I can tell the difference between the victims, the perpetrators, the ones who have no clue, and the ones that aid and abet.
Exactly.
And yes, and it's horrific. It's horrific. And the people that it's salacious for are the perpetrators. I'm not talking about it being salacious for the people who actually have a heart to help or the victims. Sometimes the people who have heard this for the first time, they don't know what to think, so they have a myriad of emotions. But it is truly salacious for the perpetrators and the pedophiles. And it's not pleasant at all to tell the story. But for the first time ever, back in May, I heard my story for myself, played back to me. It's one thing to tell it on stage. It's another thing to tell it on the radio. It's another thing to tell it on TV. We tell our story. It has, you know, it brings out a certain amount of emotions in all of us that we can control. We can brace ourselves against. And to hear your story played back, or read, in this case, as Susan did,
at the beginning of the show, when she read the synopsis, which bio is also the synopsis for the film, primarily the synopsis for the film. It's a book. I had to keep the phone away from my ear while you were reading, just far enough where I knew when you were done reading. But I don't, you know, I really, it's emotional. It's a another process to hear it. Just like language has several different processes, one to hear, one to understand, one to speak, you know, to respond, to read and to write. Those are all different thought processes. With one's story, life story that's been traumatic, it's a different process to hear it for oneself.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I had given my my book to a pastor of like 30 years, and he's Middle Eastern, raised in Jordan, and he read my story because he wanted to read it before it went to print. And I came back a few hours later, and he's bawling his eyes out, and he couldn't look at me the same after. And he just said, I can't read this without crying, that someone went through this. And it was very hard for him. And when I got to the end of the book, he had me read it to him. And I watched the pain on his face because I was detached from it because it's so long ago. And I minimized some of the things in my book so that it was palatable for people to read, because if I said everything the way it happened, I could not put it in print. And there were things that happened I couldn't even put into a word. And because I have 5 children and 8 grandchildren, I had to think about which part of it was I going to leave out. And even with writing the movie for my book, I have to be careful because of my children, and I may not continue because some of it may not be something that I want to do. I'm still deciding. But when you say that, I understand, because yes, when you hear it for yourself, it's like, oh my God, that's me. That's me that is being told about. And so I know. But for the same token, I don't watch movies on TV. I will not go to bed with that stuff in my head. I don't need to see it, hear it. I can't do it because my mind thinks in pictures.
Right. Exactly. When I was 17, my advocacy started when I was 13 or 14. And I was crying for help. I gave my story the first time in public at a town hall meeting, church meeting. There was a revival going on in town, happening in so many of the different churches. And by this time, I was going to, it wasn't a Catholic church. After my encounter with God, I went to my grandfather and I told him, my encounter with God and what God told me. He said, well, okay, it's time for you to get your shoes on. I was at my grandparents' house. He said, it's time for you to get your shoes on. So got on my shoes. We hopped in the car. He drove me back home. He went right away to see my mother, and he took me by the hand, and he said, what cult has gotten a hold of this girl?
Oh, my God.
He said, tell your mother what you told me. I was flabbergasted because I thought what I told him, he was my best friend, so I thought what I told him was well received, and here I'm learning that it wasn't. So I told her what I had told Papa, and she looked at him and she said, all right, I'll take care of it. Don't worry. And he's like, what? And she said, I will take care of it. And she looked at me and she said, I have no idea what you, you know, and just the look on her face, I ran upstairs and hid. You know, I was like, I know I was in trouble, but I just couldn't figure out why. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. So I was quickly, when I told one of the priests, I was quickly excommunicated out of the Catholic Church at 10 years old. If you can imagine that. But yet, what happened, I was three years reading the Bible. Just me and God, every day, and it was just wonderful, and I was having audible, tangible experiences with him. It was awesome, and then at 14, I started, I was in the eighth grade, and I was attending a different church, and we had to take classes before we could have our communion. I had already had communion when I was in first grade at the Catholic Church, but this was different. This was a church that I chose, that I felt where God wanted me to go after all these years. I had gone to church every Sunday. I would sneak out of the house. I would get myself ready, sneak out of the house, and I was turned away from so many churches. Here was a new pastor at this church, and I was welcome. I was finally found a church where I was welcome.
Wow.
So it was almost three or four years of going through all the different churches in town trying to be welcome. So I was going to Bible class, learning about learning so I could get my communion. And then not only that, during that time, I ended up being ordained as a Bible teacher.
How beautiful is that?
Yes. But I was still looking for help. In all of that time, the prostitution still did not stop. I still had demands on me. I still was a house slave, but I started saying no. I read in Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. But what people forget is Ephesians 6:3, or is it 6:3 or 6:5? Parents are not to incite their children to anger. I was so angry, in so much pain. I was suicidal every day. Even though I had a relationship with God, I so resented him that I could almost say that I hated him and hated people. And I would some people don't like me saying this, but I plotted murders. I mean, I was really, it wasn't that my mind was healed. It wasn't that my heart was healed, even with all of this and having tangible Bible studies with God every day. The pain that goes through a person is core pain. It goes, like, you don't understand how deep your soul is until you have this kind of pain. Or you have children that you're estranged, or children that you're estranged from. The Bible says, what good is it for a person to gain the world and lose their soul? When you're a minister, what good is it to save the world when your children are dying? Or as a parent, what good is it to have everything that you need in the world, but you're estranged from your children? And you wonder if life is worth living and going on. But it is. It is, because there's always that hope of a miracle. And you're laying down a foundation for the curses in your family's life. Those generational curses are actually generational habits that we need to take responsibility for. So we act in love towards ourselves, towards our neighbors, towards our loved ones. We are undoing
we are establishing the kingdom of heaven here on earth and undoing all the work that the pit of hell has done. The pit of hell has leashed a race of monsters that prey upon people.
Amen. Michelle, we are going to have to do this show again with you. This is such an amazing story. We are out of time, folks, but I promise you I will bring her back. You've been listening to Michelle and her amazing film that's coming out. I just want you to know.
People can go to themajestic.org to donate, please. And thank you for having me on the show.
Yes, and we will talk after the show, and we will bring you back on. And this is not the end, folks. You're listening to Susan Shengazar on The Advocate. We'll see you next week, and we will continue with Michelle another time. So stay tuned. Never miss. And go into the archives if you want to hear this again. God bless you. See you next week.
Thank you so much, Susie. It has been an amazing show, and I want to thank your guests for coming and joining you on Soul Sister Radio. Now let's get ready, and we'll go on to our next show, and that is Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan. Becky, are you there with me?
I am. I'm so happy to hear your voice.
Wow, I'm telling you, this has been a very interesting moment. We are actually live in Long Beach Convention Center for the Joyce Meyer Ministries Convention. And it's been interesting that we can go anywhere and be anywhere on Soul Sister Radio. How are you, Becky? And please introduce yourself to your audience and about your show.
Hello, I'm Becky Ryan with Women on the Edge. I have over 17 years of online experience and taking people's websites, looking at reputation, and following the trends. The trends Maria and I like to bring up is whatever's been pulling up right now. I want to find out more about Joyce Myers. I haven't seen this trending. It'll probably be trending in a couple more hours. But I do have some really good stories. I even have some really juicy ones I've been posting on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan. And we have some serious stuff going on in the Middle East. And I think that I'd like to hit that. I'd like to hit a verdict that happened to a WikiLeaks military person that came down. And I want to finish with maybe some discussion about what's going on in Egypt to the churches and the temples and the Coptic Christians and the Jews. What do you think? Are you there, Maria?
Yes, I am. I'm just muted because it's very loud here. But I do want to tell your listeners, there is a nonprofit organization here at the Joyce Meyer Ministry Convention called They Serve Too. And what is the – I can't read that. What is the sign?
www.theyserve2.org. They serve two.
And this is an organization.
Can you do it
that,
one more time?
They,
can you say it one more time?
It's They Serve Two.
They Serve Two. Number two.
theyserve2.org. And this is an organization that is filling up backpacks for the back-to-school kids that are military children. So we want to go ahead and try and support them as much as we can as all of our children are going back to school. I'm going back on mute, so when you need me, just go ahead and let me know.
Well, I'm going to I'm actually going to go ahead and I found their website. I'm going to go put that onto our Women on the Edge Facebook page. This looks like a phenomenal page and site, and you can donate right now. So many people need supplies. And when it comes down to this economy, even though the people are going into the military, there is still so much cost just to live in America and to have a child. So it would be really good. And the sacrifices that they make are crucial. So make a little child that doesn't have their mom or dad around be able to have a backpack and know that it was sent by somebody who loves and supports their family. I'm going back to the show. We're going to talk a little bit more about the military. I was kind of surprised about this WikiLeaks with Bradley Manning. And if you go back, or if the name doesn't sound familiar, he was one of the first people, like Snowden, who started putting out paper and was showing documents of various crimes that were being done. He also ended up leaking information that the government, our government felt was jeopardizing. So he's basically a traitor. I feel that there was 800 and some odd documents is what they had gone and tried to charge him with. And at the end of the day, today they ended up announcing that he's going to get 35 years and the possibility of being paroled in 12 years. And this is actually something I think if somebody had actually been a traitor, I wasn't expecting him to get out. And because of the Snowden thing that's currently going on, and he's the one that ended up saying that NSA has tons and tons of files on every American out there that has a phone, is online. He's talking about how they were tapping people in a way, but not just tapping people. They had all their information. And he fled to go to China, and now he's in Russia. And Bradley Manning was one of the first people that came to public eye about saying, listen, I can't go on like this. Our government's doing a whole bunch of corrupt things. And that's his stance. He has gone ahead and apologized. And they felt that he was not doing this as a traitor. He wasn't trying to go ahead and sell the information to another government to hopefully cause them to know more about our government intelligence or military plots, or even giving away secret documents. So he ended up getting 35 years. However, today the funny thing is, well, to me it's funny, he ended up saying from now on he is to be now declared a female. And while he's going to be in prison, he is requesting hormone therapy and the ability to go through the transformation of making him Bradley to Manning under our U.S.
Insurance. I got to ask you, how do you feel about that? Because he was just convicted of 35 years. He's going to jail. Are we supposed to pay for his transplant or sex change now that he just decides it's what he wants to do?
That's how his attorney went on to the Today Show this morning and basically said, I need to make sure that my client feels comfortable in their own skin. And just because they're going off to jail does not mean that their rights of feeling comfortable in their own skin should be compromised. So the Today Show reporter said,
No. Yeah, if you get convicted and you're going to jail, your rights to become a male or a female are gone. Why is that? Why he killed these people? So, or not killed these people. He's the one that there's two guys. There's a military guy. I want to talk about that too. A whole other story.
Going into that one. And they do believe he caused deaths. They do believe Bradley caused deaths.
Okay. He has no right. He's going to jail. All these people that are in jail that think that they still have the right, they get the right after they've served their time to be comfortable in your own skin. But until then, you're in jail. Why what's wrong with us?
Well, here's my point on it. One, I believe that the cheapest route for the hormone therapy is going to cost the taxpayers over $100,000, not even the transplant, not the switching, the cutting and replacing and the laser. That can be in the millions. Well, actually, I think that they have a price down there, like $700,000. Well, when it comes down to somebody who's been convicted, I thought it's very convenient that it's being released on the day of the verdict. Where are they going to place him? Her. She's to be declared a her from here on out. She's now in a men's military prison. Is she to go to a female military prison as a man?
This is a game. Yeah, this falls in line with that law that just passed in California, too, with transgender kids in junior high and high school get to pick whatever bathroom that they want to go into. I mean, we've got a problem here in this country, I think. I mean, really. It's getting out of hand. Have you heard about that as well?
I was going to say one more thing.
Okay.
We have a pedophile that started Dragon Con. And Dragon Con is a huge costume, Comic Con kind of convention, so you can go there in your Star Trek clothes, everything else. And it's built into a huge thing. The owner, and I cannot recall his name right now, ended up getting prison for his molestation charges. While he was in prison, he ended up declaring that he needed a wheelchair and all these other things. So it made it so difficult, they let him out. He did it again. They let him out. He went up to New York and he was doing porn movie with a little kid. And, how it was declared is that he was helping set up a movie. He's supposed to be in jail. He's not supposed to be, he's in house arrest. And he was with a little kid and one of the his workers saw that he went in with the kid. He knocked on the door and he thought it was awkward. So he went back, he called the police, and we found out he's never really serving any time. He was walking. They have pictures of him walking. He doesn't even have a wheelchair. I think they're playing a game to get him out quicker. And I'm sorry if he doesn't feel comfortable in his own skin or she. This was information leaked. And to go and play something like this, I actually think it's just a card to get out. That's my gut from right now.
It's just incredible.
Well, the only other thing I'm thinking about, though, is you might have recalled John Cuisine. He was the former governor of New Jersey. And what was he? He's like the CEO of Goldman Sachs. $600 billion are unaccountable from all of his Ponzi schemes. And he's out with the president. So one guy goes and releases a few things. The possibility of exposing some military secrets. The possibility of somebody dying because of this, and they obviously weren't able to convict him of that. But a guy that they actually know robbed billions of dollars and still $600 and some odd million, he'll never get back, but he gets to go out to eat and wine and dine, and he still has his home, car, and money coming in. Well, he's ruined other people. This is our government. I'm appalled. I don't think, you know, either one, both of them are wrong. You were talking about somebody else and I forgot about. We have another military.
This is the one where, which one am I thinking? I mentioned, the one who killed all those people in Afghanistan and he was convicted, him. What was in the news about him today? I forgot what that was.
Oh no, we're gonna have to save it for something else. I have no idea. I'm gonna have to go and Google that one.
I'm not in front of the computer right now, so I don't have anything in front of me. But there was something else. But anyway, keep going. Sorry.
Okay,
I'm
gonna tell me something
again.
Kind of interesting because of everything that's going on, and we actually have a submission to create the 51st state called Northern Colorado. Did you know about it?
No, that's interesting.
Okay, they are furious. And they've actually gotten a couple of the counties in now, Wyoming, Colorado, and Utah even want to be a part of this or create a full different state. If they do, currently how it is, and it was submitted and approved, they want they don't want their laws changing. They want to keep their First Amendment, their Second Amendment. They want to be able to have the right to bear arms. They also have been told by the government that they cannot drill their oil, and they're in poor rural Colorado, mainly huge fields for livestock farming. The drought has been so bad, they wanted water coming in. They're in such a drought and in a an area that doesn't have that many people. And the U.S. government said no. These farms are closing shop. They said, you know what? I'm not about to let this happen. Anybody else that's under these kind of drought restrictions would be able to go and get water. Anybody whose farm and stuff like this is under these kind of things, we'd be able to get some funding to cover us through. It hasn't happened. Now you're wanting to take our guns. You're wanting to go and do things that we don't believe in. And they're in a Colorado's a Democratic state, so they said, we're petitioning. They got the entire county, they got the people to approve it, and Wyoming's already in the process. Oklahoma is already in the process. They're trying to separate from the United States changes. And if they do, they're going to be only about 7% of the population of Colorado would be falling into it as it is standing right this second. But it will be the 47th largest state. So, you know, it's going to be a good mid-sized state. And as other counties are voting this in, they may be a lot larger. It's going to be one of the redder states with 20% Republicans, but even the Democrats that are in there, so they don't want their rights changed. They want to be able to drill in their land, get the oil, build up the factories, and take care of the people they have. And I thought, wow, I'm with them. If this ends up going through, Texas and this new northern Colorado and with what's going on with Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Wyoming have already submitted. The president does not have, it's not like a bill. All they need is so many people signed, so it's already going through. Now, they do have to go and clear county lines, and this isn't going to be an easy one, but they've already gotten a map, and I posted it up, one of the pictures. So they're serious. And I thought, you know, think about how we're not being supported here. Rights are being changed. We also have to go and look over at Obama's brothers making it in the news. I didn't really think of Obama having a brother, but apparently he has a half-brother that he has seen, Malik Obama, and he is not only linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is causing so much of the chaos in Egypt as we speak, and it's attacking Christians. It's going after the temples. We're even kind of funding it, which is news that the Egypt wants to go and disclose how much funds is going into the Muslim Brotherhood that's causing terror on their entire country. They've already asked Obama to come in and send more support, and Obama hasn't. With 600 people already dead in this past week, slaughtered, beaten, hanged, and decapitated on video in daylight, all because they believe that their president that was removed, President Morsari. Are you there? It's Morsi. That's it. President Morsi.
I am.
What was his name? President Morsi. Okay, so President Morsi, since he's been moved, the violence has gone. The Muslim Brotherhood just was created. Obama's brother, who he does know, who he does hang out with, who he has pictures with, finances them. How shocking and appalling is that?
It's a little disturbing.
Egypt has set out Egypt has gone and put out a declaration from the vice president of the Supreme Court of Egypt to inform the world that the American people in particular, that our president's brother, Malik Obama, is the top architect of the major investment firm of the Muslim Brotherhood, who's causing this chaos and blaming the Americans and going after the Christians, and they've declared to go after the Jews. Is that something we should have? And as
disaster.
I'm going through all,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is this
sorry.
Something we should have with a president? And how come while he's going through this that we've known it? Now, out there, reports, and within 2 days, there's already 30,000 top newspapers reporting this. It's not all over our news. You have to search for it. And his name is Malik Obama, if you haven't heard it. And there is one report after another. He definitely is not for the Americans' involvement. He wants America to become Muslim. He wants Egypt to be run as a theocracy under Islamic law. I don't know if you recall, but a couple years ago, some military people in Afghanistan had burnt a Quran. And Obama went out and said he deeply sympathizes. He was appalled by this behavior. He said that the military needs to be more sensitive and trained in understanding this more. And he continued, blah, 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 blah. Reminds me of the rodeo clown, but blah, 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 blah. While we have people dying and crying, buildings are being burned, and the death toll is 525 for today. It is the bloodiest bloodbath that's just of Christians. They also, have you ever heard of the Saint Virgin Mary Church of Egypt? You can say yes, no, indifferent.
I'm not sure, but if you remember, Magdy Basili really runs 10% of the Christian outreaches in Cairo, so it could be one of his. I'm sorry, but go ahead. I'm going to mute again.
I'm not used to not having you coming back and forth, so I apologize to our listeners. I like having Marie right here, and I'm going to finish with, go Google St. Virgin Mary Church. I have it on the Facebook. It is so old, they believe it to be, they know for sure that it started service by the 3rd century. It hasn't stopped except for the past 12 years. They had petitioned and petitioned to finally be able to revamp and restore the church. And in Egypt, it was very difficult for anything that is Christian to be approved. Because it's such an old treasure, they accepted it. It took them many years to fix it up. It opened up in April to start service again. This place has had more service with Coptic Christians all the way back to the 3rd century. The Italians attacking, the Muslim takeover, Christian takeover, one thing after another, one war after another. It has always stood. It is burnt. It is destroyed. Right now we can see a restored tower, and it's something really sad. We need to be praying for our brothers and sisters. We need to be praying for all of them that there is some peace in the Middle East. And I want to hear, if you can, and I don't mind how noisy it is, I'd like to hear how the conference is going. I love Joyce Meyer. I love going to the Orange County. It's huge.
Actually, we are 30 minutes out before it starts. It starts at 7 o'clock, and today is the first of the 3-day conference. So I'm excited to be here just simply because I'm watching how the dynamic of the conference works, and someday, hopefully within 2 years, I am expecting the Soul Sister Hut and Soul Tour to maybe not be this big, but I want it to be relevant like this is. So I'm excited about it. When's the last time you've seen Joyce Meyer?
The year I left, 2010? I went twice. And one time I came on the Friday, and I think you should always go for the Friday all the way through. The second time I only went for the Saturday. You miss out on quite a bit. You get to know what the message is. She goes through it in the morning. You're going to have an idea of where you want to be sitting. And the fellowship, the worship, the song, the word, getting to know other people. And actually, we ended up becoming friends. And she is dynamic. She gets the room charged, and the Holy Spirit just rains down. And you feel the presence of God in each one of us. People be crying.
They're crying, laughing. What I really appreciate about Joyce is that she is not what you would consider, you know, she always complains about her voice, I should say, that when you listen to her voice, it's not a very pretty voice, but when you listen to her voice, it is powerful. You're right. You know that the Holy Spirit is speaking through her, and God has used her in such an amazing way, especially with her background. If nobody knows her background, it was her father, her own father, and I'm going to go loud. So go ahead and end your show. You got 5 minutes, Becky. I can't talk anymore.
Okay. Well, I wanted just to go and say that please go and check out our archives. We love the idea of being able to travel all over. We love the fact that you guys are listening to us from your homes, from your cars, from your internet. And I really do want to leave us with going into Women on the Edge and telling me your feedback, telling me your concerns, because I think that as the world is changing here in America or wherever we are, if you're listening from the U.S., there's so much going on outside and so much going on here at home. I really do want us to start saying, you know what, let's serve, let's help, let's go on out there. When Jesus told us that we needed to go two by two and start going from city to city, we need to serve and we need to love one another, even if we're not for the same beliefs, maybe we're not for the same faith, the type of work. We need to be loving one another, especially during this difficult time. And when I go back to the 51st state, there's quite a few people that are in that farmland of North Colorado that they wanted to go and declare. They have resources that they could be tapping in and feeding their people. We need to come up with ways to start feeding and encouraging each other and supporting the ability for each one of you guys to be getting a job, to take care of your kids, and to make sure that we have somebody who is sound body, spirit, and mind. And that's why we listen to Soul Sister Radio. We have a variety of hosts, and I really do appreciate each and every one of you. And I want to go and thank my producer, Maria DiGiovanni, and thank each one of you guys. We are going to be doing our own conference very, very soon in October, and we'll be doing it live there. And I want to go and send blessings to you, everybody out there in Orange County. Pray for us.
It's going to be fun. I went to the venue yesterday, and we are just 100% supported there. And the hotel, if we don't get the home, and we're still praying for Scott McKay to open up his doors and give us that yes, Scott, if you can hear me, we're really praying for the home. But if we don't, then we're going to be staying at the Quality Inn over there off of Lake Forest, and it's going to be an exceptional time. My jaw is off. So, Becky, you have a minute, so go ahead and close out, and we will see you next week.
Thank you, and we will see you next week. And you can get a hold of Marie DiGiovanni and Soul Sister Radio, and you can also find us on Blog Talk Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at webmoxie.com. Thank you guys so very, very much. Love, prayers, and inspiration. We are going to do this together as Women on the Edge.
We will see you next week on Soul Sister Radio.